tonight's ride, courtesy of William Henry. And we're talking about old myths that perhaps have modern application. I don't know. It's all very interesting. The Illuminati, what did they know? What secret knowledge did they have? We'll look more at that in a moment. Once again, William Henry. William, you know, it's kind of interesting. Years ago, I've been doing this program so many years now, people used to call me up and say, you are a member of the Illuminati, aren't you? And you're trilateral, and you're this and that. And I got so fed up, and CIA, I got so fed up with answering that question that I finally gave up, and I started saying, yep, sure I am. And so you can go to the internet now, and you can put in my name and Illuminati, and you will find endless pages of Art Bell symbols with the Illuminati. I actually know damn little about the Illuminati. Tell me what you can of them, William.
Well, I actually began, of course, you run through the typical sort of material, the David Icke access of material and so forth, but I went to the English dictionary one time and I looked up the word Illuminati and it referred to a newly baptized Christian initiate. They were called Illumined Ones or Illuminati, and they were actually given a taper, a lighted candle, as a symbol of their illumination. I wrote a book called Mary Magdalene, the Illuminator, because she was called the Illuminati in the 13th century. And so I started to see that there's this whole other take on the Illuminati as a group of beings that seek to bring about an awakening of human consciousness. And the farther you dig into the ancient world, the more you bump up against beings, for example, the Shining Ones and others, that possess this tremendous scientific knowledge that's focused on these gates. And there are part of these beings that seek to withhold knowledge of these gates from humankind. Remember when Adam and Eve were evicted from the Garden of Eden, Yahweh placed a gate at the garden with two cherubim on either side and a flaming sword in the center to prevent our return. When we tried to rebuild the Tower of Babel, that was an attempt to rebuild the gate to God, but once again, Yahweh decided he didn't want company, so he smashed our tower and separated humankind by language and changed the meaning of Babel from gate to mean confusion and nonsense. And so you see these two sides lining up throughout history. One side of them wants to open the gate. The other side wants to withhold knowledge of the gate from humankind.
Which side are you on at the moment? You want the gate opened, and are you really sure you want it opened? Are you sure that we're ready for it to be open?
No, I'm not. I don't want to hedge on this, but I continually wrestle with this, and I can see why they might withhold some of this knowledge, because a particle accelerator capable of opening a stargate or a wormhole can also be a weapon capable of shattering the entire planet. And so I see a certain benevolence in this in terms of putting the brakes on it, that this knowledge, this transformational knowledge, call it magic or the craft, whatever term you want to use, is not for everybody. It can fry people if they're not ready. And if a person is not coming from the right heart space, you got real problems. And vis-a-vis Adolf Hitler, Saddam Hussein, other figures that have tried to utilize this knowledge.
In the wrong way. Okay. Wild card line, you're on the air with William Henry and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is James from Indiana.
Yes, James.
I had a one quick question, then maybe a theory. I was just wondering, you know, even if you're operating, if your body's operating at a frequency that could protect you somehow from the gravity forces of a singularity, how would you fit through something the size of an atom?
Your body wouldn't. That's the message. See, theoretical physicists are saying, well, it's impossible for us to engineer the opening of a hole large enough for the human body to squeeze through. The human body won't squeeze through it. The human body is an interface for what the early mystic traditions referred to as our divine particle, our our sacred nucleus, our seed atom that's within us that we might even think of as our soul. And so from the soul's perspective, the human body is merely an interface that enables the soul to travel through the gate. That's what my research has revealed.
So you're talking about the actual energy that's within us?
Yes.
Okay. And just somehow transporting that to another vessel?
Exactly. And again, this is where theoretical physicists get hung up. They want to focus on, well, if we could open the mouth of a wormhole large enough, then we'd have to have some kind of protective material to line the tube of that wormhole with to protect the human body. No, the human body is not designed to go through these. This is why it's impossible. But the human body is the interface that the soul can use to open those gateways.
Okay. And then just a quick theory that I've had for about 10 years now. This is largely based on, you know, life's experiences, testimonies from others, including my family. And it involves, this will kind of be in the defense of God. You know, I don't know what your views are on that, but, you know, as far as demons go, you know, like I've learned through, you know, church and everything, and, you know, what the Bible says about them, and it says that, you know, one demon alone possesses more knowledge and wisdom than all of humanity combined. Now, would it be possible that that demons, you know, even in the Bible, they've had interaction with the human race even as deep as the Nephilim go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't it be possible for them to also have undergone some impartation of technical knowledge, say 2,000 years ago, to the ancient Egyptians, you know, where because they had, there's evidence, right, you know, that they had a working knowledge of electricity and its principles, advanced engineering concepts as seen in the pyramids, and, you know, astronomy and advanced, geometric principles. Would it be possible that some impartation of knowledge took place there?
Oh, I absolutely think so. And that's what I think we're seeing in this visual code that you see in the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Book of the Amduat. So many of these other temple depictions portray God stepping through these gateways. They actually portray apparatus that are involved. There's one device that I've been studying called the Osiris device, the Osiris pillar that you see at a place called Abydos in Egypt, which is the gate to the underworld, the gate to the nether world, the other realms. And so they clearly had this technology, and somebody brought it here. At least that's what Egyptian myth describes. They talk about formless beings that came out of the cosmic ocean that created human civilization on Earth, on an island of the egg, as they call it. They talk about a relic that was utilized by these beings as sort of a creation device. They talk about these formless beings taking on human bodies and how the civilization developed, nearly suffered a cataclysm, and that this relic was deposited in a repository and reclaimed. And so we see this story played out over and over again, and it appears that this knowledge was brought here a long, long, long time ago.
Well, it's very important, I think, for the audience to understand that these were not just artifacts of a belief system, that in fact, as you just mentioned, they really did have a lot of technology. And as a caller mentioned as well, this technology was real. It should not have been available to them then. They should not have known all of that then, and yet they did.
That's right. In fact, I'm going to Egypt again in January with John Anthony West to look at some of these from John's perspective, this place in particular, Abydos, which is next to the Osirian, that John's convinced is a temple that may be at least 12,000 years old, probably a lot longer. And what you see on the exterior wall of this temple is what I call the logo for the enterprise of this temple. And it is a device that Egyptian myth and legend said could drill holes in space. And so based on that, we have to ask, is this device a literal tool, technology, appliance, or is it simply a symbol for a collection of sciences that these beings possessed? I think it's all of the above, actually.
Okay. Well, that should be an interesting trip, and you're going with the right guy. East of the
Absolutely.
Rockies? Yeah. East of the Rockies, your turn with William Henry. Hi.
Hi, Art Bell. This is Connie from. I'm originally calling from Daytona Beach, Florida, but I'm originally from. Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I'm originally from Virginia, the mountains of Virginia and the foothills of Tennessee.
Okay, Connie, do
And
you have a question for William?
yes, well, actually, I have. I know where there is one pyramid. I've seen it myself in, at the foothills of Virginia, and it goes from the ground. My brother lived at the base of it, and you could stand at the in his yard, and you have to look straight up. I mean, straight up into the sky to see the top of this mountain. And he says that there's three more about 5 miles apart, right where he lived at. And he has found artifacts. I mean, he has found jewels that is twice as big as your fist because he tilled the ground and he grew gardens and he would dig up and plow up emeralds and rubies and sapphires. I mean, they were as big or bigger than twice the size of your fist.
Well, there you go,
And
Connie. There have been discoveries, and William, I'm sure you are aware of this. There have been discoveries all over the world of pyramids that have sort of just, I don't know, as they uncover and do work for modern structures, they suddenly uncover these apparent sacred sites and these pyramids in different parts of the world, not just Egypt.
Right. It's they. I believe in this whole idea of this network of pyramids throughout the planet that are working with the ley lines, the energy lines of the planet, and that the ancients did possess this technology where they could network or gang these pyramids together as perhaps a power system or even a communication system.
Must have been something, William, because how in the world could it be the entire world? In other words, sure, maybe it's something the Egyptians developed, but now we find pyramids in Central and South America, we find them in Asia, we find them even in the United States. And so somehow there had to have been some form of communication at a time when people could not get from here to there or talk from here to there.
Right, and this is something I have a new book coming out later this year called The Dimension of the Blessed. And what I started noticing through the years is that, especially when you're beside pyramid sites or other teaching facilities, they're always talking about this field of the blessed, this dimension of the blessed that accompanies this place. And I'm talking about Teotihuacan near Mexico City. They talk about that place as the place of the gods, and they called it
That's right.
the place of reeds, the place of the blessed. And then you have the same thing in Egypt, an identical temple layout with the pyramid in the same place, the same myths. And it just, you get this idea that, okay, they're telling the same story and over again because it's very important and it is the key story that we want to focus on.
And how could it be?
Right.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Henry. Hi.
Hi, guys. You
Hi.
Know, in answer to that last statement that you made, or just an extra statement, perhaps the world was really populated, greatly populated, with very sophisticated people long, long ago. So not just little isolated areas. This is Denise. I'm in Oregon, and I wanted to tell you a story, Art. And in fact, you're one of the little characters at the end, I'll tell you. My mother and I were sitting in her kitchen one night, and I was getting ready to say goodbye. And of course, the lights are on in the kitchen, and the windows popped out at the back of the house. And you know, when it's light inside, it's pitch black outside. You can't see. It's about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And all of a sudden, it's as though an elephant dropped out of the sky. She has huge trees in the backyard, and it's as though something that was mammoth dropped out of the tree. And it had to be bipedal because it passed the window, bump, 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 running. I mean, took off running. And behind it was this noise, bing, 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 shooting, as though someone was waiting for whatever this was that fell out of the tree.
And was shooting at it.
And they were shooting at it. And then all of a sudden, there was no noise at all. And I, of course, we were transfixed. I mean, the minute this elephant fell out of the trees, we were transfixed. Our eyes were locked.
I would have no idea what that was or what it
Well, it isn't that I don't know what it was. It was that I looked at her and I said, did you hear that? And she said, yes. And I said, what was it? She says, I don't know, but you've got a heck of an imagination. You've been listening to too much of Art Bell. And I said, well, if you heard it, then you have a good imagination, too.
There you go.
So my question to William was this. Wormholes, maybe they can be programmed to particular designations. In other words, the operator of a wormhole perhaps can decide where he's going to land.
Yeah, that would certainly be, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't think I have one in my backyard is what I'm saying.
Are you saying a literal elephant dropped out?
No, something
like as if an elephant. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was huge. It was so huge. But I don't think it was this dimension because we didn't see light. But we heard it. But the shooting that went on, and we heard the feet hit. I mean, hit so hard. It was as though, I mean, the thing had to be mammoth, whatever it was.
And you think it was cloaked? In other words, it was invisible?
It had to be because we saw nothing. We were so transfixed because it was so huge, so obviously huge.
Yeah.
And then within seconds, it was gone.
Yeah, this whole cloaking business is really intriguing to me. When I started talking about future warrior suit that the military is developing, they're also building a cloaking device into that.
Oh, yeah.
And the idea has been presented, well, if they're talking about a cloaked soldier in the open literature, that perhaps they've had this technology for a good while. And I've heard of people in Arizona and elsewhere where they claim they have encountered cloaked military people. So maybe this whatever it was, that this object that you're describing, this cloaked object, has this capability and perhaps can tune itself in and out of whatever location it feels like going to.
And you think that wormholes maybe perhaps can be programmed to certain designations by the operator?
Right, and that's the whole idea. The big question is, well, okay, so we open a wormhole. Now, where do we go? Sirius? The Pleiades? The center of the galaxy?
Medford, Oregon?
All right. Thank you very much. So much of what we talk about on this program, William, whether it's Bigfoot, various creatures that are seen and then seem to just sort of disappear right in front of people's eyes, or so-called alien craft that are there and then suddenly they're invisible, they're just gone. So much of what we talk about that we call the paranormal on this program, William, seems really to fit in very neatly with the concept of other dimensions and things kind of coming and going, whether it's via a wormhole or it's some sort of natural variance and occurrence in all that is.
Right, and I go back to to Terrence McKenna's statement that the whole mission basically of our life is to learn to exist in other dimensions. And so when we're seeing these demonstrations, it should be very exciting to us because this is something that we're certainly capable of doing as well. And in fact, that may be a big part of what we're all about. Life must be a preparation for transition to another dimension. And I just get excited when I hear things like that because it says, okay, this is a school, this Earth school, and what are we here to learn? Well, we're learning to achieve a state of lightheartedness so that we can enter these other realms.
Well, I have eternal curiosity about these other realms, William. Just eternal curiosity. And somehow it all mixes together for me. And that's I wrote a book called The Source, and that's sort of what it tried to say, that all of these things, these strange things that are reported on this program and others, are really sort of single-sourced. I don't know. Anyway, my guest is William Henry, and we've got one more segment to go, so everybody stay exactly where you are. From Manila in the Philippines, way out here in Southeast Asia, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. The Egyptians certainly did not fear the Reaper. They sought him out. They figured ways to aim themselves right in his direction. Osiris, was it? Hi there, everybody. William Henry will be right back, as will I. Once again, William Henry. Jason in Olympia, Washington asks, in the creation of multiple subatomic black holes, kind of like a collider experiment, is it possible for the event horizons to cascade or cross tunnel, pulled by gravity, the net singularity being large enough to capture larger atomic scale material? Is it possible when we get a big enough collider, William, that we'll get a big surprise?
Yeah, it's very possible. We talk about building these giant space-based particle accelerators or atom smashers, these colliders. And, you know, when you go back and you look at the early Sumerian stories about Tiamat and Marduk, this figure who smashed Tiamat with his arrow and this world exploded, we have to wonder, as scientists began to wonder back in the 70s, is it possible that this Sumerian tale is describing a black hole? And that something went terribly wrong with this black hole and created this cosmic catastrophe. And you look at that and say, well, that could very well be a warning for present theoretical physicists.
Well, they say no problem. We can create little black holes, no problem. We'll see. First time caller line, you're on the air with William. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Ann from Oregon, and
Hi.
It's so nice to have you back.
Thank you.
I've listened to your programs about chemtrails, and listening to William talk about manipulating DNA and creating a new skin, is it possible that an attempt to do this is a use of chemtrails?
It could well be. I mean, I don't have any direct data about that, but if the Maya are correct and they are talking about this new light, this new vibration that is trying to come upon the planet, is it possible that there is a force out there that seeks to prevent that light from coming in? And so they put up these chemtrails that act as a shield of some kind. But we also have this possibility that these heavy metals or the metals from the chemtrails are seeping into our skin and altering us. So it's something that's a little bit outside of my range, but I'm very curious about it.
I'm curious, too. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Henry.
Hey, good morning, people. My name is Count Duco from Miami. I have a question about evolution. I wonder, do you guys believe in evolution? Because I have a different take on it. I believe that we come from monkeys to humans and maybe angels and God. What are your take on that?
Evolution, okay.
Yeah, I think that's a very key component of this. In fact, earlier I mentioned this confluence of genes, bits, neurons, and atoms, these four technologies coming together towards the creation of this new skin. There's a researcher, David Deutsch, who talks about the confluence of four areas of knowledge: quantum physics, evolution, computation, and knowledge, that are ultimately going to lead to this new point of creation. So certainly this whole evolutionary debate is a key piece to this whole puzzle.
I've always thought that evolution and creation could go hand in hand. I just never saw a problem. They argue and argue and argue and argue. But why is it not possible for the hand of creation to be involved in evolution?
Sure. And why isn't it possible for humankind to evolve to the level of the angels, too? I mean, I think that's a lot of what this
that's
is about,
right.
is
that's
keeping
right.
us in, down on the farm.
Mm-hmm. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Henry. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great conversation, gentlemen. This is just great. There's so many. I had so many different things I want to say to point on everything that you had talked about. By the way, this is William from Detroit, CKLW 800 AM.
Yes, sir.
First thing I wanted to mention was how earlier in the program he mentioned the Illuminati and how there seems to be two facets, one that wants to help us evolve into the transcendent life, basically take us to the next evolutionary step of humankind, and the other that seems to want to oppress it. They're almost actually one and the same, and how that would be, it's kind of like in alchemy or in magic or in any group situation where the goal and the aim is the same focus, and you have a leader or a directive, and the rest of the devotees are the ones who go through the motions. They all reap the rewards, but there'll be those who above who will transcend a little further based on the hierarchical scale and where they're at in the midst of the change itself. So they're kind of one and the same. And that's basically how symbolism works in much of the esoteric and occult sciences. which brings me to the next statement slash question for your guest. And I'm sure he's aware of this, but are you aware that pretty much everything that was talked about from every different aspect of belief or foundation could be related to a system right now that is also used by the Jews, the mystical Jews, the Kabbalah, where as we progress scientifically into understanding different realms of energy, and the more sensitive our instruments, the deeper we go, and we find out that they all deal with two things, wavelengths and, well, basically vibrational wavelengths.
Frequency. Yeah.
Frequencies. There you go. And every tradition speaks of this. You get it with colors. Different vibrations bring different colors, different vibrations,
correct,
geometrical shapes. Well, this is basically the transcendence or the culmination of an age, and every tradition will speak of it differently, that we're basically on the cusp of right now. As we progress scientifically, it's almost like the difference between a whistle and a dog whistle. If our ears were sensitive enough, like a dog, we'd hear the whistle.
Right.
So basically everything that, you know, basically, I guess the question is your guest aware of the system that he's speaking of is in physical sciences?
Okay, we're starting to lose you. You're on a portable phone or something.
I mean, it is. I'm in the back room, so I didn't interfere, and it's actually interfering. I'll stay
still. I see.
And to be honest with you, Art, this is not too different to what Aaron speaks about, Aaron Donahue, although...
Oh, I know. Whether it's Aaron Donahue or it's a modern witch, it's all very close, William.
Yes, I am aware of the Kabbalah, and I appreciate the call from Detroit. I grew up in Birmingham, Michigan, so it's always nice to hear from the hometown there. And I think it is all about tuning, and the human body is a instrument that is meant to be tuned to the highest possible frequency. And we do this through the food that we eat, the thoughts that we think, the air that we breathe, and it all comes together. And I certainly encourage people to look into these mysteries from that perspective, that this body is meant to be a tool of ascension for our soul. And what we see as we have these conversations about the Illuminati is so many times they're trying to control and manipulate the input and the output of this instrument, of this body. And literally the body is an energy device. Jordan Maxwell calls it a cell. And this is why when a person is put into a prison, we put them into a cell. It's because our body is all about energy. It's all about vibration and who's going to control it, who's going to manipulate it, and for what purpose.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're out of your little cell and on the air with William Henry.
Yes. Hello, Art.
Hello.
Yes. All my best to you and Aaron and the immediate family.
Thank you.
I have a question tonight pertaining back to the Nazis. I'd like you to possibly touch on the symbolism of the swastika. Also, the lightning bolts that were worn on the collars. And I'm thinking, if you have this same perspective, that this type of symbolism may have given power to the Third Reich through some sort of occult divination. And I'll get off the line to let anybody else get on. And love you, Art, and God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Thank you. William?
Right, of course, yeah, the Nazis were masters of propaganda and the use of symbolism. They understood the power of a symbol, using the lightning bolt to energize themselves, the swastika originally being a symbol of prosperity, which then they turned and inverted. It just sparked this whole incredible notion about what was going on at that time. We have to remember that at the same time the Nazis are invoking their symbols in 1935 is when FDR put the all-seeing eye on the back of the $1 bill.
That's right.
This is not by coincidence. These are two, I'm not calling FDR a magician, but the purpose in putting that symbol on the back of the dollar bill was to have a magical purpose. It was to align the American civilization with the meaning of that symbol, which is the return of the light to the planet, to Earth. And so I just always marvel at the use of symbols in this way. And it's tremendously important for us to learn to read the language of symbols, because otherwise we're blind to what these groups are actually trying to use us for.
Okay. Wildcorn Line, you're on the air with William Henry. Hi.
Hi, this is Keith from Sedona, Arizona, Streamlink listener.
Yes, Keith.
My question My question goes way back. I have a past life memory of the war that blew the fifth planet into the asteroid belt and devastated Mars. I believe it's the same conflict we're in Iraq. Can you talk about what the Sumerians and others have to say about this? And I'll see you at the expo and George Norrie as well.
Okay, oh, beautiful. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, this is the real service that I think that Zachariah Sitchin performed is in his interpretation of the Sumerian texts, and some take issue with them, but he did bring forth this idea that, hey, there was an Atlantis story in the stars that happened a long time ago and involved the splitting of a planet and also the cataclysm on Mars, and it looks like the same players or at least certainly the same script is trying to be enacted today on Earth, where we're developing these tremendously powerful technologies that can leave Earth hanging in the balance and cause another one of these incredible cosmic catastrophes.
Okay. West of the Rockies, time's getting short. William Henry with you.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
Hi.
Hi. I am up here in Lander's Inn. I'm cleaning these stones, okay? I do believe I am Rachel from Genesis. I found a lamb, and I believe it's a scepter, and I've been cleaning it other than other stones that I've been cleaning and just picking up. Now I've picked up stones with writings on them. Now, I have full intention on finishing this. It's a full-size, it's a decent-sized lamb. My question is that I have this feeling that by actually cleaning this ancient world, this stone, not just this one, but many other ones that I have gathered, it will make this change that you speak of, sir.
Okay, well, there's so many people with, with past life memories, with thoughts about other things, kind of things we've been talking about, William Henry, and she's another one.
Yeah, and I think it goes to this whole idea that we're trying to transcend some of the, call them errors or mistakes of the past, that this stuff comes up because it needs to be moved beyond. And that's what we're in the process of right now is, I think, in this global war on terror where we have these two sides lining up, what we're trying to do really is transcend something within ourselves, and we're bringing it forward in this very negative way. But ultimately, we have to focus on a simple question, and that is, how will we know when we have won the war on terror? That is never given as a suggestion. We know the war on terror will be over when. We knew when World War II was going to end with the defeat of the Nazis and the defeat of the Japanese, and now the war on terror is being compared to World War II, but there is never a target that is given for us, and that's what
perhaps when the light comes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fourth wildcard line, you're on the air with William Henry. Hello.
Good evening. I just wanted to tell you how much I enjoy your program, and especially tonight, because it validates so many of what those of us that are coming out of the closet feel like, just the paranormal mixing up with science and finally saying it's real, and
that's right.
We're a part of it.
That's exactly right. That's what we were saying earlier, that there's a meeting that's beginning to go on. It's still being denied by a lot of scientists, frankly, because they just, they have to protect their reputations and their funding and all the rest of it. But it's obvious to those who are even casually looking that there is a meeting that's beginning to go on.
It is, and it's helping those of us who have been hiding for so long, especially if you have to live in the normal world and take care of your everyday reality, to say, it's okay. We can start talking about these things and being a part of things and not hiding so much and even having our kids participate.
Well, that, my dear, is why we're on the air. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Henry. Hi.
You say West of the Rockies?
I did indeed.
Okay, sorry. Thanks, Art. Yes, quick comment and question. I don't have any faith in our world leaders to get past where we're at, and they're going to destroy our planet. I think they're like cavemen playing with sophisticated fire. My question is, this war on terror is put forth as a war between the Christians and the Muslims, but I think there's a third group that's not hardly talked about, and that's a Russian-Chinese coalition, and they're using the Islamic radicals to weaken the West, destroy the United States if they can, Israel. so that the Russian and the Chinese coalition can put forth their version of one world government, and I'll listen on the ear. Thanks.
Okay, you're very welcome. And what do you think about that, William?
Well,
are the Russians and the Chinese behind some of the
well, it's possible. I mean, China does have a 500-year plan for the future, so they definitely operate on a much faster time scale than we do, and they could just be waiting for us to cancel each other out, and they come in and take what's left.
Could be. I'm not one who thinks that is necessarily so, but could be. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Henry.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, hello.
Hi, great. I'm on here. My name is Mariah, and I'm calling from Utah. And I am a grandchild of the African slaves. And the one thing I wanted to say is, as far as the war between Muslims and Christians, I remember 500 years ago where we were beat and killed and raped because we did not conform to Christianity. And we will not forget. And that's the one thing I wanted to tell you.
Yeah, that happened. That's right. And the fact, though, that people are not forgetting about things like that is exactly what's driving our future and our present.
And that won't go unpunished either.
Won't go unpunished.
It will not. I mean,
yeah, but, you know, eventually it's going to have to be forgotten in some way or another, or we're just going to destroy ourselves. You don't want to see that happen.
The eradication of the Caucasian race.
The eradication of the Caucasian race. Is that what you want
to
see?
Right. Hey, I love my country. I love my leaders. But there's one thing that I will not forget. That's what has happened to us and my grandmother and my grandfathers. And we are the ancient Egyptians.
Hmm. Well, William, not a lot of light there.
Well, she did bring her voice up for healing, and hopefully the audience can come in and send her light, send her love, and everybody else that was involved with that, and that serves a very important purpose in her making that call.
Oh, it does, and I hope she feels better for it, but the eradication of this race, or this religion, or that religion, I don't know. It's all pre-light stuff, that's for sure.
Absolutely, and it goes to this idea that if you're focused on hate, you're certainly not in a space of love, and so why can't we take the same energy and emotion and put it into love and reaching for the stars? That's the whole point of this flip from terror to terra to compassion and enlightenment.
All right, buddy. Do you want to plug again the Bay Area UFO Expo? Because it's the soonest.
Absolutely. Thank you, Art. Yeah, that's September 8th through the 10th with John Lear, Nick Bagich, Danian Brinkley, William Henry. It's a phenomenal weekend, an incredible experience, and good chance to meet and greet everybody, and hope everybody will join in.
Okay, well, it sounds like it'll be a big one, that's for sure. How about any books? Do you have any books that you want to mention?
Yeah, my new DVD set, Shadow of Atlantis, is the most recent, and also The Illuminator, about Mary Magdalene and her connection to these mysteries.
And those are available
at williamhenry.net.
williamhenry.net. All right, buddy, it has been a pleasure. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Art, so much.
You have a good night. Take care.
Many blessings.
All right, everybody, tomorrow night is an Ed Dames, Major Ed Dames kind of night, and he's had some recent very interesting predictions come true, and with North Korea doing as it is doing right now, I've got the sad feeling another one of them may be about to come true. From Southeast Asia, the other side of the world, I'm Art Bell. Good night.